Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview. Here in studio with my extremely attractive audio engineer. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. Speaking of original thought, I can't seem to find one right now. It's this time change. I've lost an hour's sleep. Did not have an opportunity to take an afternoon nap, which I'm often want to do on Sundays before the broadcast, because I had to go outside in the sunshine and enjoy it with my children as my extremely attractive audio engineer took care of all her domestic duties around the house. She was not allowed out in the sunshine, but I did take the little ones out. 70 degrees in Denver today, sunny. So we went out and soaked up the spring-like weather. It was awesome. We refit the trampoline with new skirts, and so the youngsters are out testing it as we speak. Had an awesome meeting last night with the Abolitionist Society of Denver. Carried that over into church this morning. Lunch after church. Just a great group. All of the forces who are working to end the legalized murder of innocent people in America, of all places. It's always satisfying to get together with them. And then it's depressing, on the other hand, to now go through the news of the day with you people. Because, well, the news of the day is fairly depressing. And confused. It can be quite confused. I've got a story here from Governor Jerry Brown out in San Francisco. So you can imagine how confused this is. Listen to how confused Jerry Brown is. He says he's not sure legalizing marijuana is a good idea. I know, Jerry Brown. I thought he was on marijuana all the time. But he says that the country could lose its competitive edge if too many people are getting stoned. Forget about the morality of it. Jerry Brown has no interest in morality. He's worried about the tax base. Lose our competitive edge. The tax base declines pretty soon. He can no longer give patronage jobs to all his nephews and nieces and dysfunctional cousins and illegitimate children. For crying out loud. It's a direct political threat to Mr. Brown. Forget the morality aside. Because Jerry Brown says, well, a certain amount is okay. Well, a certain amount of what, Jerry? A certain amount of smoking dope or a certain amount of legalizing dope? Not sure what he means there. He says there is a tendency to go to extremes. And he says, he says all of a sudden there's advertising and there's legitimacy. But how many people can get stoned and still have a great state or a great nation? So careening into sensical arguments once in a while, obviously mentally deranged from years and years of massive pharmaceuticals. Jerry Brown is animated by the modern pharmaceutical industry, and it comes through whenever he gives an interview. Just a very confused fellow. Jerry says of his state, California, by the way, this is from the San Francisco Chronicle, just in case you were wondering. The Chronicle. You get it? That's a joke from the 90s. All right. He says, we have medical marijuana, which gets very close to what they have now in Colorado and Washington. I think we need to stay alert. He says, I think we need to stay alert, if not 24 hours a day, at least more than some of the potheads might be able to put together. So Jerry Brown, Jerry, you're the governor of California. You do need to stay alert 24 hours a day. Well, you or someone on your staff. And really, everyone should try to be alert as often as possible and not dulling their senses, dimming their wits. And certainly no governing official should be legalizing a drug that will devastate families, lives, spirits, everything. Jerry. But Jerry doesn't know why. He's very confused. But, you know, Jerry's a Democrat, so we would expect this type of confusion from a Democrat. So on to the scene now here at the Worldview, coming marching across the stage, is the great Republican hope, Ted Cruz. That's right. From the politics file, we've got a story I pulled down from WorldNetDaily.com. They report from National Harbor, Michigan, out at the CPAC convention. Senator Ted Cruz got the Beatlemania treatment by the media at CPAC today. And the crowd went wild. Everyone was cheering. The WorldNet Daily reporter goes on to talk about how it was very difficult to get an interview with Mr. Cruz. He was supposed to give a speech or meet with members of the press in a small side room, but they say he's such a rock star that the plans were changed and he spoke in a huge, large hallway behind the security rope that the media press were, they say members of the media tripped and fell over each other, pushing and shoving, trying to get close enough to ask a question of the great, well, I can't call him the great white hope. Is he Mexican or is he a white guy? Is he Mexican? He's a lawyer, so it doesn't matter. He's a white Hispanic, I think. Isn't that what they call him these days? Anyway, I'll just call him the great Republican hope, I guess. Anyway, they tripped all over each other like teenage girls at a Beatles concert in 1963, trying to get a question in, and very few were able to question him, but WorldNet Daily says our reporter, Gina Loudon, walked alongside Cruz and managed to ask the senator a one-on-one question. WorldNet Daily's a bit gushy, a bit like a little girl themselves. They say she managed to ask him a question. She asked Cruz if he thought the GOP should take social issues out of the conversation in the upcoming elections. Now, if you've been listening to The Worldview for any amount of time, you know that we have been breathlessly awaiting Ted Cruz to make a pronunciation on so-called social issues. You know, marriage, I don't even want to say the word because I know how annoyed you get whenever I mention those people. Honestly, you know what I mean. You people know what I mean by social issues, starting with, number one, the legalized murder of innocent people right here in our midst, in our own peaceful, abundant communities, the legalized slaughter of innocent human beings. That's the number one issue. And then there's a bunch of others that I've been waiting to hear Ted Cruz ruminate on for quite some time. So when I saw this headline, the headline says, exclusive, Cruz talks social issues with WorldNet Daily. Well, I got excited. Finally, I thought, Ted Cruz is going to pontificate, which he's been needing to do, frankly. So she asked him about it. Should social issues be a part of the conversation in the upcoming elections? And here's what Cruz said. Quote, I don't think the politicians get to decide what the people care about. Well, he's from Texas, and he's a lawyer. Have I mentioned that Ted Cruz is a lawyer? You people. Anyway, that's real leadership from Ted Cruz. When asked about the social issues, he says that the people, they'll care about whatever. It's not up to the politicians to decide what the people care about. And he then cautioned immediately after that rather nebulous statement. He said he cautioned that there are important problems to address first. First, he said, the country has to get back on its feet economically. We need to reclaim our standing in the world. He then criticized Obama's handling of the Ukraine crisis. The president's failed economic agenda. He says the country needs to change course both at home and abroad. And soon, said Senator Cruz from Texas, completely brushing aside and ignoring any conversation of any depth about the so-called social issues. So Ted Cruz, I never heard of the guy. Get out of here with that. Get out, Ted. All right. So that's it for Ted Cruz. We'll move on now to more news from the proctocracy. That's right. Yeah, the rule by lawyers. Look it up. Proctocracy. Coined here first at the Weekly Worldview. We're all living under the thumb of the proctocracy. The thumb of the proctocracy. Do you get it? Sometimes I crack myself up. Anyway, more news from the Proctocracy. This is from CBS in Boston. Massachusetts State Supreme Court last week dismissed charges against a man who was arrested by transit police during a sting after they had got reports. They had gotten reports that this man was using his cell phone to take photos and videos up female skirts and dresses. Well, the Supreme Court had to dismiss charges. His attorneys argued that he was protected by the First Amendment. You know, freedom of expression. Taking pictures. It's art. It's art. Photography. Haven't you ever heard of it? It's art. Ask the lawyers. They'll tell you. Well, he was being prosecuted under Massachusetts' long-established Peeping Tom laws. And this left a legal intricacy that made the Massachusetts Supreme Court look like a bunch of fools. Because they said under the law, the person being photographed has to be nude or partially nude. But the way the law's written, it doesn't protect people who are wearing clothes in public. So the Supreme Court didn't know what to do in Massachusetts. The ruling went on to suggest that the act in this case should be illegal. And then they dropped all charges because the law wasn't written quite precisely enough. Ay, ay, ay. So they just basically assigned more work to their fellow bureaucrats in the Proctocracy to write new laws, guaranteeing jobs for the illegitimate children and dysfunctional cousins of other lawyers and politicians permeating the bureaucracy. The lawyer class. This is the Massachusetts State Supreme Court's way of ensuring plenty of work for the lawyer class, looking out for each other. So they ruled that the man accused of secretly snapping these photos up women's skirts on the bus and on the train, they ruled that he did not technically break the law. So the Proctocracy sprung into action. Later last week, Governor Deval Patrick signed a bill that was pushed through by the Proctocracy, all the lawyers in the legislature there. They quickly wrote up a law that made it illegal to photograph or record video under a person's clothing, down a blouse, or up a skirt. Very specific. I mean, the lawyers do a great job of being very specific about things. And by the way, the new crime is a misdemeanor, punishable by up to 2.5 years, a fine of up to $5,000, or possibly a job with the Supreme Court of the state of Massachusetts. The law was signed last week and went into effect immediately. Talk about fast action. Possibly the person being photographed gets the fine. It's hard to tell. The lawyers may have to clarify that. There may need to be some revisions to the law, and we have clerks working on that right now. In fact, one of them is the illegitimate cousin of the Supreme Court, what do they call the chief justice there? I believe it's his illegitimate nephew's cousin, is one of the clerks working to clarify that law. Who exactly gets the fine? And who gets 2.5 years in jail? And who might just get offered a job working in the cloakroom at the Supreme Court? Finally, to bring this first segment to an end, and just to annoy my extremely attractive audio engineer, you remember that the don't ask, don't tell, don't seek, don't smell, don't smile policy was lifted in the military recently by America's first homosexual president, Barack Obama. No, I didn't say that. Newsweek said that. Remember, he had the rainbow halo over his head and all that. I mean, forget the rumors about him in the bathhouses of Chicago back in the 90s. I mean, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about he's the first homosexual president, and I think he'd be proud of that moniker. He may very well wear that lapel pin on certain days and in certain crowds and in the bathrooms of certain bars when he visits Chicago or Honolulu. He may or may not. It's just my opinion. But now, American troops have performed a drag queen show on an American military base in broad daylight in front of God and everyone for the first time in American history. Where did it take place? Kadena Air Base.
No!
Okinawa, Japan. Now my extremely attractive audio engineer happens to hail from Kadena Air Base. I mean, not Kadena Air Base. From Okinawa, Japan. And we have visited Kadena Air Base together. Yes. So the first... Yeah, it's an Air Force base. Let's get that out there right now. It's not Camp Smedley D. Butler. The Marine Corps base there. Now, the first drag queen and king show on an American military base has indeed occurred, according to TheWeek.com, which we assume is a reputable news source. They had pictures, for crying out loud, right there at Kadena Air Base. And let me just tell you something. I was at Camp Smedley D. Butler as a Marine in Okinawa back in the late 80s, early 1990s, and I remember using a public restroom on Kadena Air Base, and I remember sitting in the stall and reading some of the messages that were posted there on the wall. This was before the internet. You couldn't post on someone's wall. They literally posted on the wall. So if you're on a Marine Corps base, there's always entertaining reading when you're in the stall. But I noticed that on Kadena Air Base, there were active solicitations and actual instructions on where to go and what to be doing and how many puffs to take off your cigarette if you wanted. Anyway, it was disgusting and repulsive. Needless to say, I clenched and I got out of there. Yeah, that was disgusting. So this is not a new thing on Kadena Air Base, but now it's broad daylight in public, fully sanctioned by the command. And The Week reports that new reports show that the rate of sexual assaults in the military, especially male-on-male sexual assaults in the U.S. military, has skyrocketed and is on the rise. And that's just creepy and scary and disgusting to think about in the military. You know, for all you young fellas out there who are thinking that you'd like to serve your country, I'm just thinking maybe, you know, now might not be the time to join the military because, you know, we've got Barry in charge. And the military may never be able to join the military unless something changes dramatically. It may not be long before the whole thing is run by a drag queen. I remember actually laying on the seawall in Okinawa looking up at the clouds, listening to that song, as a matter of fact. We were looking at the clouds. Anyway, I know it's supposed to be a male civilization, but even back then, Kadena was slightly... It was Air Force. No, Air Force guys didn't hang out at the seawall because that's where young, virile men... went to meet attractive Okinawan high school girls. And the Air Force guys, they generally stayed in the bathrooms on Kadena. They didn't have to go out. Yeah. All right. Now, let's move on because that's kind of creeping me out now. I had a bit of a crisis of conscience this week, thinking that maybe I was becoming a bit of a kook or a crazy. Well, a couple of things happened, as a matter of fact. First of all, Monday morning, jump on the internet, reading the news. Michael Savage has written a column that sounds like he was actually listening to my show. So, and not that that makes me a kook, but the problem was later that day, he interviewed a guy from Alex Jones' Prison Planet for an entire hour about the Ukraine activities, whatever you want to call it. And I agreed with half of what this guy had to say, so I thought maybe I'm becoming a nut job because you know how I feel about Alex Jones, you know? And later in the week, over the weekend, as a matter of fact, Friday, Saturday, Alex Jones, one of his reporters from the Prison Planet website, we're all just in prison. We're all being lied to. It's all false flags operations. You have no control. It's the fluorides. Gotcha. Anyway, you know how I feel. Anyway, one of Alex Jones's reporters actually linked to a story on KGOV.com. That's one of the sponsors on this show. Well, no, we don't let them advertise, but they sponsor us, you know, spiritual way. And one of the internet's first radio stations, by the way, KGOV.com, where I can be heard regularly in a podcast derived from the on-air traditional terrestrial broadcast that I do with Bob Enyart upon occasion on KLTT Radio here in Denver, daily, 3 p.m. Alex Jones reporter linked to a story about dinosaur soft tissue. And if there's those of you out there who aren't aware, every time they crack open a dinosaur bone these days, they find soft tissue, blood vessels, blood cells, fibrous tissue, flexible. Anyway, and it's been sort of a silent cover-up. And you know, Alex Jones, they're all about the cover-up. They want to find the stories that are being covered up. And in this case, they happen to have stumbled across an actual cover-up, the dinosaur soft tissue. So anyway, now by Alex Jones and the Prison Planet guys linking to this story, does that help or hurt the case that dinosaur soft tissue does not support old Earth evolution and all that? Does it hurt now because the tinfoil hat types are linking to the site? So anyway, it was a bit of a crisis of conscience, wondering, am I beginning to float into the realm of the crazies? Or are the crazies gravitating toward us? Is there going to be some sort of intersection at some point where the only people left that have any sense of what's really happening, that half of them are crazy? Who knows? So I was having a bit of this crisis, but I had an opportunity to read some other news this week, and I'm going to get into Ukraine and foreign policy here for a minute. And I want to start with five key facts about Crimea. This is from LiveScience.com. Knowing that most of the people in my audience, like me, were disabled by the government schools early on, half of us, I didn't even know where the Crimea was. Had no idea. So let's go here. Soviet leader Nikita Khrushchev, by the way, okay, the Black Sea is at the southwestern portion of Russia there. The Crimea is host to Russia's Black Sea Fleet and represents Russia's only warm water port. Why does that matter? Well, it matters because any country that wants to project its force around the world needs a warm water port so that you're not frozen in there half the winter. And so the Crimea, by the way, was a part of Russia up until 1954 when Nikita Khrushchev gave it to Ukraine. And it's very unclear why, but it seems like it's because Khrushchev's wife was from Ukraine and they vacationed there a lot and he liked it and he gave it to Ukraine because, hey, it was all the Soviet Union anyway at that point and he wanted to do something for friends of his wife. It's really weird. Anyway, since the Soviet Union collapsed in 1991, the Crimea has existed as a semi-autonomous region of the Crimea, of the Ukrainian nation, has a lot of Russian people and has a lot of Ukrainian people. Again, Russia's only warm water port. The Russian Navy's kept its Black Sea Fleet stationed in Sevastopol since the 1700s. In 2010, Russia negotiated an agreement that allows the country to share the all-important Sevastopol base through 2042. It also allows, I believe, approximately 25,000 Russian soldiers to be stationed there in Ukraine. So the stories you've heard over the past few weeks about this invasion of Crimea, it's actually Putin just sending his troops outside their base to protect from whatever or to represent Putin's strong arm there. But an invasion, it's hardly an invasion, okay? That's all. Let's see here. Russia controls a lot of natural gas for Ukraine, obviously, and Western Europe. Ukraine has been called the breadbasket of Russia. Much of the grain needed to feed the country's vast czarist empire through the Soviet Union years and even to today are grown there in Ukraine. Crimea relies on Ukraine for much of its electricity, and Europe relies on Russia for about a quarter of its natural gas. The natural gas that Russia sends to Europe travels largely through pipelines that snake across Ukraine. The Crimean War. Let's go up in the Wayback Machine. Come with me now. You remember the Crimean War? From 1853 to 1856, France, England, and the Ottoman Empire fought the Russians for control of the Crimea and the Black Sea. Russia eventually lost and ceded its claim to the peninsula, but not before they burned and ravaged just about every city on the peninsula. It's quite a colorful history. And obviously a very important strategic geographic location. Now, the Crimean War was noteworthy for several things. Florence Nightingale and the Russian surgeons introduced modern methods of nursing and battlefield care that are still in use today. And the Russians soon abolished their medieval system of serfdom, in which peasants were bound to serve the landowners, even as soldiers. And the Crimean War is noted for the first use of photography and telegraph, making it the first really distinctively modern war. So you've got Ukrainians, you've got Russians, and you've got the primarily Muslim Tatars of the Crimea, who were well known as slave traders back in the 17 and 1800s. Who raided lands as far north as modern-day Poland. And you know why they call the Slavic people the Slavic people? Because they were slaves, sold into slavery by these Tatar types, along with the blacks in Africa and all the other people who were enslaved by primarily Muslim slave traders. Stalin starved hundreds of thousands of Tatars and deported many, saying that they had collaborated with the Nazis. Which is kind of ironic because Stalin had been collaborating with the Nazis up until the Nazis invaded Russia. That changed his mind. So anyway, as I said last week, there's just no good guy there. It's all a kleptocracy run by the mafia at this point. But my concern was with the Nazi types, the fascists. And listen to this, ladies and gentlemen, from Channel 4. In Britain, the new secretary of the Ukrainian National Security and Defense Council is Andrei Paruby. He was the founder of the Social National Party of Ukraine, a fascist party styled on Hitler's Nazis. So did you catch that? The name of it was the Ukrainian National, Social National Party of Ukraine. And this guy's the new secretary of the Security and Defense Council. But it doesn't stop there with the fascists who have been given top posts in the so-called Ukrainian government that Barry and Kerry and all the rest seem to be thinking are some kind of legitimate government. The Social National Party went on to become Svoboda, a far-right nationalist party whose leader, Oleh Tyanobok, was one of the leaders in the Euromaidan protests, the ones who were throwing the firebombs, the ones who were shooting the police. Overseeing the armed forces in this new government is Deputy Secretary of National Security is Dmytro Yarosh. He's the leader of a party he calls the Right Sector, Nationalist Street Fighters. These are the brown shirts I was telling you about last week, who had boasted they were ready for an armed struggle to free Ukraine. The Right Sector was in an alliance of hardline nationalist groups, including Patriots of Ukraine and the paramilitary group Una Unso, who fought against Russian troops in Chechnya and Moldova. Their members paraded in baklavas and wore uniforms bearing far-right insignia, including the Wolfsangel, which is a version of the SS, swastika, just Nazi stuff. Now get this. The new deputy prime minister in this new Ukrainian government is Alexander Seitz. He's a member of the Svoboda Party, which the World Jewish Congress called on the EU to consider banning last year. They've declared that the Ukraine is controlled by a Muscovite Jewish mafia. I just say the mafia, but of course they have to point out that it's Jews. I told you, worry about the Jews. Svoboda, this party, this National Socialist Nazi Party, now controls the Ecology and Agriculture Ministry. And the deputy head is running the Ecology, and Ihor Shvaika is Agriculture Minister. These are all members of these fascist parties. And Ole Maknitsky, another Svoboda member, is now the acting prosecutor general. So I had a bit of a crisis of conscience when some of the nut jobs on radio were starting to at least glance off positions that I was taking regarding the fascists in Ukraine. But having read this article, and I've got a little bit more, I definitely don't feel so bad today. An appropriate Cold War anthem there. Yeah, one of the few songs from the hair metal era that made any social commentary whatsoever. We appreciate it, boys. Well, yeah, it did. Yeah, sort of. So let's return to the Ukrainian crisis. Hillary Clinton, one of the stupidest people to ever achieve political authority. She's the former Secretary of State. Can you believe this? She compared Vladimir Putin telling his troops to leave their bases and surround them with weapons. She compared that to Hitler in the Sudetenland. Yeah, she says, Putin's desire to protect minority Russians in Ukraine is reminiscent of Hitler's actions to protect ethnic Germans outside Germany. That was Hillary Clinton. She made her comments at a private event benefiting the Boys and Girls and Girls Clubs of Long Beach, California. It's the Boys and Girls Clubs, but since Hillary's there, it's now the Boys and the Girls and Girls Clubs. Now this sounds familiar. It's what Hitler did back in the 30s. Putin is a man who believes his mission is to restore Russian greatness. So when he looks at Ukraine, he sees a place that he believes is, by its nature, part of Mother Russia. Hillary said, being a complete idiot and not a student of history, because Ukraine is a part of Russia. Frankly, it's been a part of Russia for, anyway, a few hundred years. But what Hillary pointed out is a complete misreading of everything associated with anything having anything at all to do with anything to do with what's happening in the Crimea today and in Ukraine today. This is what's happening in Ukraine. Dmytro Yarosh, who I just mentioned, he's the ultra-nationalist chairman of the Right Sector Party, which is a anti-Jewish Nazi party, has announced, and he's in the government for crying out loud. He's in the government right now. Where is he? I have to go back to my story. He's the Deputy Secretary of National Security. So he's been given a position in authority over military forces in the government. And now he announces he is running for president in the elections planned for May 25th. Yeah, and he says that the right sector's now going to become a political party. We are preparing for a Congress at which the party will be renamed. We will participate in the elections in Kiev and in all local councils, towns, and villages. We remain the leaders of this revolution. We are mobilizing. We are preparing to react to foreign aggression. He said as he gave like the Hitler salute. All he needs to do is grow the little mustache. And he's running for president. And people here in America are falling all over themselves because I have a feeling they worship the thought of revolution. And they're confused about what Russia is now and what the Soviet Union was then. And who are the good guys and who are the bad guys? The bottom line is they're all bad guys. And we certainly should not be meddling or getting involved, possibly militarily, in a battle between a bunch of Nazis versus the mafia versus the Muslims. We just don't need to be involved in that. We need to let them cull the field a little bit before we involve ourselves and try to find a good guy in Ukraine. Now, that would be quite the mission. Try to find a good guy in Ukraine who should take over the country. Well, there probably is someone in the church there in Ukraine who should take over the country and restore peace and civility. But none of the players who are on the stage now are anyone we should be dealing with or supporting. And we certainly shouldn't hold them up as anything better than Vladimir Putin, for crying out loud. Now, speaking, what happens when fascists take power? Like they very well may do here in Ukraine. The fascists, encouraged by the Western democracies, the worshippers of democracy and revolution, the fascists may very well take power in Ukraine. And what happens when fascists take power? Well, we don't have to go back in history to look because it's happening right now in Syria. I've got a story here from Haaretz in Israel. The city of Raqqa in northern Syria was once the residence of Harun al-Rashid, the famed fifth caliph of the Abbasid Empire. Well, this past week, it seemed, according to Haaretz, that the city of Raqqa returned to the days of old, to the era of the great Islamic conquests, when a radical Islamic organization seized control of the city of Raqqa in northern Syria. So, radical Islamist organizations who want to govern, they are fascists. They're the same thing as the Nazis. They're the same thing as the fascists of the 1920s and 30s who had to be destroyed in the 1940s and defeated. They are the fascists of today. And they have gained control of this city in northern Syria, Raqqa. For the first time, Haaretz reports, in many generations, a dima was signed between the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, that's ISIS, the group that we've been covering, an Islamic branch of Al-Qaeda, and the leaders of Raqqa's Christian minority. So what is a dima? Well, it's a protection agreement that fascists forced their subjugated populations to accept. Members of ISIS gave the Christians three options: accept the dima agreement, convert to Islam, or be killed. The dima is a tax, and it's really just protection money that the fascists charge to stop. Like, you wouldn't want anything to happen to your business, you know? You wouldn't want your wife to get hurt or any of your kids to be injured. It'd be tragic to see your business burned down. So we can make an arrangement, and we can make sure that that doesn't happen because we care about you. We want to take care of you. So the dima is a tax paid by Christians to live in fascist Muslim states so that they can do business and not be killed. The Christians, under duress in Raqqa, have been forced to sign an agreement under which they will commit to pay a twice-yearly poll tax of about $500 per person. The agreement permits the Christians to follow their religious practices, but they are prohibited from building new churches or rebuilding any churches that are destroyed. Christians may not prevent members of their community from embracing Islam. They are forbidden from bearing arms, from engaging in commerce involving pork with Muslims, and from acting against Muslim interests, whatever that means. And if Christians learn of a plot against the Islamic State, they must report it. In return, Christians agree to all that. In return, the Christians are to be granted protection of life and property. But should they violate the terms, the protection could be revoked. So that's what happens when fascists take power. And when Muslims take power, fascists have taken power. Oppressive, backwards, godless heathen, godless pagan states, condemning their people to 1,000 years of darkness. And can you believe that our Secretary of State and our State Department and talk radio hosts across America don't understand that the fascists are taking over in Ukraine? And I know it's unfortunate and it's cumbersome to deal with the idea that Vladimir Putin could be on the right side of this, but I'm sorry. I know who Vlad is and I know what Vlad is. And ever since he threw down the gauntlets against the homosexual Nazis, I've not been so quick to knee-jerk reject Vladimir Putin as a possible ally in certain battles, geopolitical, all across the planet. All right. And Vlad has also made war upon the Muslim fanatics and fascists in the Caucasus. So, all right. So now that's it for global geopolitics. Let's move back over here. A question that my extremely attractive audio engineer asked me the other night as we were flipping through the news, and we got to the Love Fest on Fox News for CPAC, and she said, what does CPAC stand for exactly? And I said, nothing at all. I had to explain that because she doesn't dabble in such foolishness as CPAC, so she has no idea. She lives such a charmed life. She doesn't have to deal with any of this. But I told her CPAC stands for nothing. Speaking of fascists, it's as if the fascists, at least I would call them fascists of thought, have taken over CPAC. Yeah, this is from the Personhood file. Not a single panel or specific speaker on life issues was scheduled at the CPAC conference, which is supposed to be the preeminent annual gathering of conservatives in America. So Breitbart reports that there were panels on the IRS scandal, immigration, Common Core, privacy, gun control, criminal justice reform, career counseling, making friends, pot smoking, vaccines, and leeches, but not a single pro-life panel. I'm not making that up. I said vaccines versus leeches had a panel at CPAC. Yeah, I think, if I'm not mistaken, that's where Karl Rove was speaking on behalf of the leeches. He was on that side. Now, Breitbart reports that life issues motivate a tremendous number of grassroots activists who also vote conservative and Republican. But the way they report this story, I'm convinced that Breitbart doesn't understand why the tradition of lip service to the life issue has been abandoned. It's to me as if Breitbart is saying, hey, we've paid lip service to these pro-lifers for 40 years, and it's worked really well. Why are we abandoning this strategy of at least letting the pro-lifers sit at the table? We're abandoning a strategy that's been very effective, and it's a strategy that I've pointed out has worked well for the Republicans. You know it. First, bamboozle the Christians. We are round and third, headed for, I know, I feel like screaming sometimes too. The Republicans have become so evil, so corrupted, so corroded, so vile, that even pretending to care about morality and social issues has become extremely uncomfortable for them. Karl Rove can sit on a panel and talk about leeches or pot smoking or making friends or career counseling. But to allow people who even say that they're just pro-life, that's all, to even allow them in the room would make the people who organize CPAC extremely uncomfortable. So they can't even give lip service to those of us who believe that murder of innocent people should be illegal, all innocent people. So anyway, I met at the first meeting of the Abolitionist Society of Denver. I signed up, I joined. I'm an abolitionist. And the speaker there, Jonathan Sutherland, an impressive young man who has quite a future in spiritual warfare. He talked about breaking with the pro-life movement. You know, the moniker pro-life is great, but it's a passive moniker. It's just how you feel about something. It's just your opinion. He's an abolitionist because he's doing something about it. And I think that for most of my lifetime, the people who call themselves pro-life, who are in many cases decent people, who don't want to see the killing of innocent people in their communities and in their midst, but they've been satiated in just declaring, I'm pro-life, and then going back to whatever they do. And in the meantime, you know, a million innocent people are murdered every year. And it's been going on, well, for almost my whole life. My whole life, the murder of innocent people has been legal in what many people call the greatest nation on God's green earth. They actually say that on the radio. They don't do anything about it. They talk about great Americans. They don't do anything about it. They say they're pro-life, but they don't do anything about it. Well, I want to do something about it, and the abolitionists want to do something about it. So I've joined up with them, and I'm still allied with the personhood forces, because I do believe that changing the law is an important step in changing the hearts of individual people. So I haven't abandoned personhood, because personhood is an active act toward abolition. So I'm for all that. Anyway, the CPAC, do I have anything else? No. I don't have anything else on CPAC. I don't even know if Karl Rove was invited to CPAC, except for the leeches panel. Isn't he too establishment for CPAC? I really don't know. Is CPAC now establishment, or is it conservative? I don't know. I don't follow Republican politics that much. Speaking of Republican politics, let's go to the politics file. Michelle Bachmann, former presidential candidate, former, what was she, a congressperson? Congressperson? She was a congressperson. She says that she's sorry that Governor Jan Brewer vetoed the bill in Arizona that would have allowed businesses to legally refuse services to homosexuals because of religious objections. She says she's sorry that Jan Brewer didn't sign it, but Michelle Bachmann, like so many Republicans, who I really want to like, I want to like somebody. I'm looking for a leader. I am. I'm open. Ted Cruz, when I saw that headline, I actually clicked that story hoping finally I would hear something from Ted Cruz that I could relate to. You know what the world needs? The world needs a man to lead them. And God knew this from the very beginning, and that's why he always knew that at some point he would have to send his son, Jesus Christ, as a man. Because we need a man to lead us. We're all looking for a man to lead us. And every man will mislead us. Every man will lie to us. Every man is out for his own belly. Except maybe George Washington. A singular figure in history, George Washington. Except for him. The rest are all flawed. And the sad thing is many of them are not looking to the man who God sent to be the example. They're not looking to him. Not even Michelle Bachmann. And she's considered a right-wing Christian crazy by the lesbians over at NBC. That's Yeah, and the people at the homos who edit the New York Times, they think Michelle Bachmann is a Christian fanatic. But listen to why Michelle is sorry that Governor Brewer vetoed the bill allowing Christians to behave like Christians in public, which is really what the bill was about. Just about letting Christians behave like Christians in public, which will soon be, if not already in your neighborhood, will be against the law. You will not be allowed to behave like a Christian in public. Now, you will be able to sodomize one another in public before too long, but you will not be able to behave like a Christian. Now, the reason Michelle Bachmann is sorry that Governor Brewer vetoed the bill, she says, "I believe tolerance is a two-way street. We need to respect everyone's rights." Everyone. Yes, everyone. Even the homosexuals who want to make you sell a cake for their wedding, she wants to respect their rights too. And this is she's one of the great hopes of the Tea Party, Michelle Bachmann. She has no clue. She has no clue. She's not qualified, in my opinion, to run a rubber stamp at the DMV. And the Tea Party thinks that she... And Ted Cruz, same thing. He's qualified to do research in the bowels of some law firm, I'm sure, just because of his degree. But I would not allow him to laminate driver's licenses at the DMV because he doesn't know where he stands on the issues that will save or destroy the nation and the families and the people. All right. Now let's get a little bit of good news in here. From the Domestic Tranquility File, the Romicki family, they came to America. They fled Germany. They claimed the German government was persecuting them because they want to raise their children in accordance with their Christian beliefs, and they homeschooled their children. Terrifying to the German authorities. Well, if the Romickis had stayed in Germany, according to this story from Fox News, they risked losing custody of their children. The German government had actively, the courts there, had actively petitioned to remove the children from the Romicki family. And they got a bunch of kids, Christian folks. So they were granted an asylum in America in 2010, but the Obama administration found out they had snuck in the back door and decided to appeal that decision, and the Obama administration won. And the Supreme Court last week, you remember, declined to hear the Romicki's family's appeal to try to stay in America so they could keep their kids. And they've been here. They've been in America since 2008, by the way, which is, let's do the math here, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Over 5 years they've been in America. So hopefully they can just run out the clock and get all their kids educated and graduated before the Obama administration deports them or whatever. Anyway, some good news. The Department of Homeland Security last week granted the Romicki family indefinite deferred status. What does that mean? Well, it means they're not going to be deported tomorrow or the next day, but it's indefinite. And the Romickis are basically trying to run out the clock, and the good folks, Michael Ferris and the other folks at Homeschool Legal Defense Association, are working hard to help them, and we certainly appreciate it. And this is very good news that the Romicki family will be allowed to try to run out the clock against the Obama administration for a little while longer. So that was your good news. That's it for the whole week. Yeah, now it's back to the grind here. From the Daily Mail in London, 33 North Koreans face execution after being charged with attempting to overthrow the regime of Kim Jong-un. What did they do? Well, the Koreans had worked with South Korean Baptist missionary Kim Jong-wook and received money from him, allegedly, to set up 500 underground churches. That was their seditious activity, setting up churches where people could worship the living God and his son, the Savior, Jesus Christ. That is sadistic activity against the communist, fascist regime of Kim Jong-un. Now, according to the Daily Mail, missionary Kim Jong-wook was arrested and jailed last year for allegedly trying to establish underground churches. He held a news conference a couple weeks ago under duress where he apologized for committing anti-state crimes and appealed for his release from North Korean custody. Well, a South Korean intelligence source in China says that the missionary did not enter North Korea voluntarily, but in fact he was kidnapped by agents of the Pyongyang government in China. And by the way, so these executions are scheduled to take place at any time. We don't know because it's hard to know what's happening in North Korea. But this forced confession by this missionary, Kim Jung-wook, a Christian missionary, is a very bad sign that he could be executed along with 33 other North Korean Christians. North Korea continues to hold American missionary Kenneth Bae. And so far, there have been between 40 and 80 public mass executions in North Korea this year, which only started 2 months ago. 40 to 80 public mass executions of enemies of Kim Jong-un. Meanwhile, the whole world teeters on the precipice of a global conflagration because of Iran. From the Telegraph in London, the Israeli Navy has seized a ship in the Red Sea that was carrying dozens of advanced Iranian-supplied rockets made in Syria that were intended for militants in Gaza. Dozens of M302 rockets were found. A rocket can strike deep into Israel from Gaza, and the Telegraph reports that it would have significantly enhanced the firepower of Palestinian militant groups such as Hamas. So that's these weapons. They were found. So if these weapons were found, one must ask oneself, how many weapons haven't been found? How many M302 rockets have gotten through to Gaza? And they say these rockets would have enhanced the firepower of Muslim militants. Maybe they already have. Maybe the militants already have a good number of them, and you got to hope that the Israeli intelligence and military can stop every case of smuggling. But I mean, if you go back to the Lebanon war in 2007, it's obvious that the once vaunted Israeli military and the once vaunted Israeli intelligence services are not what they used to be, and that makes the world a much more dangerous place, along with the fact that we have suicidal, sex-obsessed, drug-addled children running the country here in America. Now, finally, ladies and gentlemen, another story from Breitbart. A young lady named... This is on another note altogether. Just in case you were worried about the end of the world, I just want to let you know that... Well, Valerie Lukyanova calls herself the human Barbie. And she's had surgical procedures to make herself look like Barbie, the doll. She practices breatharianism. That's an attempt to live on air and sunlight alone. We reported on the breatharian some years ago, back on the original show. Well, in recent weeks, she says she's not been hungry at all. She's hoping that she's in the final stage before she can subsist on air and light alone. Now, breatharians, they claim to be from another planet. They also claim to be able to communicate with aliens through the use of light waves. They have the ability for time travel, and they often have out-of-body experiences. Breatharianism. Yes, that's it. That's the key, see? They don't subsist only on air and sunlight. But there's also got to be some pharmaceuticals mixed in there somewhere, right? Whether street level or pharmaceutical grade. Anyway, just something kind of silly and funny, but obviously it won't be funny for her eternal soul when she does meet the living God. Because Jesus Christ came to save the world or judge the world. It's up to you what side you end up on. He wants to save you. But he will judge you, breatharians and all. Okay. So that's it. It's the Weekly Worldview for this week. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, KGOV.com, Denver Bible Church, American Right to Life, and all my friends in the personhood movement, and abolitionists everywhere. Should the Lord tarry, we'll return next week. Oh, and my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studio. Should the Lord tarry, we'll return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.